To Everybody A, Everybody Gay.
A queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your host, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Welcome! This week we are in the bin of sin, so strap yourselves in.
Yes, they couldn't resist that rhyming title, even though they keep referring to it as the barrel this whole time.
Yeah, no one calls it a bin. That does not happen anywhere in this episode. I feel like, just to start us off here, this episode has some cool moments, but looking back, this is one of the most bad faith episodes of Pretty Little Liars, because there is so much emphasis on this barrel and the implicit contract that you have with the audience when you're building this suspense is that even if it's not Mona's body in the barrel, that whatever is going on with this barrel is in some way going to matter.
Yeah, that's a really good point. This episode, I feel like, I feel like we've talked about some episodes this season where it's like, okay, maybe the overall plot stuff doesn't make a ton of sense. Maybe none of this is going to matter three episodes from now. But there's still a lot of like fun stuff happening in the episode that keeps you engaged. And I felt like this is one of those episodes that's just a lot of like rehashing the stakes and sort of arguments that the liars have had a lot of times before, and a lot of like crosstalk or people talking over each other. And yes, there, I agree that there are some fun moments and there are some moments I really like, but this is not, there's not a lot of like interesting character stuff happening in this episode, which is, that's what I'm always on the lookout for.
Oh yeah, the character stuff is rough because there are a ton of fights. Like everybody is very fighty with one another in this episode as we go along. And I guess my main thing, like, it is not uncommon for there to be, especially as the show like goes on later into its run, for there to be like a thing that everybody is having to look for that we know isn't gonna, like post time jump, Arya is like scrambling around town checking everyone's golf bags. We know that that golf club probably isn't going to matter. At one point, Emily is like on a roof and that truck is menacing her because she's trying to get a hold of something that, again, we know probably isn't going to matter a lot. But like, what's supposed to be in this bin of sin, it's supposed to be Mona's body. It's supposed to be like, you know, the corpse of a character that we have grown to care about and love, and that the liars care about to varying degrees. And it's supposed to be really high stakes for Hannah and for Caleb and for Spencer. And so to just write this off eventually is like, oh, it was just some corpse from the medical college is just, I mean, it's bad faith. It's written in bad faith, I feel.
Yeah, I totally agree. Also, just a note, the thing that Emily is looking for is ridiculously one of the like arms of one of those suitcases, the idea being that somehow she killed somebody with that, which those are the flimsiest little things. You could like, you know, just push your hand on it too hard and snap it. And the idea that that is, could be a murder weapon is truly one of the most ridiculous things on a very ridiculous show.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's dive in to this bad faith episode. We begin with the weekly recapping of the stakes. As we discussed, you know, we've been wondering why we keep starting with these scenes, seeing as how the show does have previouslys, but I think it actually seems like it's a sign of how convoluted things have gotten that we need to announce what theories the liars believe in this week, or what is real and true here in this present moment. This week it's the storage unit rented in Hannah's name that maybe has Mona's body inside of it. Hannah is understandably worried that this could send her to jail. The other liars want to have Caleb destroy all the records that connect the unit to Hannah and then let Tanner find it and hopefully connect it to Holbrook. Hannah hates this plan and thinks they should get rid of everything, like the way that Caleb disposed of the knife. They disagree and Hannah storms out.
I do like that Spencer and Caleb take a minute to like congratulate themselves on having destroyed the knife. Like they're like, it was a good call that we did that. Like, they kind of have to pause and do that. But I agree. Like, it's gotten to the point with these pre-credits scenes where I'm just like, I'm pausing every 2 seconds because it's like every line of dialogue seems important because of the way it's being delivered. But then when I actually write it down, I'm like, oh, that didn't mean anything. And that's not going to matter at all. So over at the brew, Arya and Emily are talking about the fact that they're both having nightmares. Arya, of course, very quickly pivots to talk about herself. She is once again pretending that she's finding ways to talk to Prezra about this whole letter business. As she goes off to call him because he's doing his boss man drag and really enjoying being a very busy, busy businessman. Goes over to talk to Talia, who has made a pecan pie for Prezra. Obviously, pecan pies and underage girls are Prezra's love language. Emily makes it clear that Prezra is not available, and Talia apologizes for stepping on Emily's turf. Emily is just like, oh, no, you're not stepping on my turf. I'm not dating him. I don't date men, which... that was really easy, Talia. Like, you made a whole to-do about finding this information out last week. You didn't find out this information, and here it is. So easy. Talia kind of seems to take in the information that Emily's ex was a girl. Emily advises Talia to back off since Prezra is dating one of her best friends.
Yeah, this is a real red flag here that Talia, like, would not have any issue with Prezra dating his teenage employee. Obviously, she knows who Prezra is and is cut from the same cloth.
And also pie. I mean, pie is such a thing for Prezra, and it's a thing for Talia, too. Like, the similarities are getting more and more between those two.
True. In the Marin kitchen, Hannah is looking online for chemical-resistant gloves. Ashley comes in and Hannah quickly closes the page and asks about Ted. Ashley has told him that when you fail at marriage once, it's not easy saying yes the second time. And he is understanding. She's now decided telling him about Jason would cause unnecessary pain. Hannah thinks that it would gnaw at her if she married Ted with this, you know, secret still on the books. Ashley says only Hannah and Jason know, and she trusts them both to keep quiet. If Hannah wants to help, she can forget it ever happened. Why is no one asking if Ashley does or does not want to marry Pastor Ted? Why is everybody just taking it as a given that, like, well, this eligible man has made you an offer, so, you know, you're...
I also find it weird that they don't state in this scene, like, I feel like Ashley gives this, like, non-answer where she's like, well, Ted understands, and it's like, what does he understand? Did you tell him that you don't want to marry him or that you need more time or that you do want to marry him, but you want to marry him in like a year? Like, it's, I mean, we get a little more clarity as the episode goes on, but they're very unclear about what Ashley actually said to Ted. Also, did you get the impression that Hannah, I mean, which would be a pretty on the nose thing for her to be worried about, that Hannah is worried that A might use the Jason Ashley thing?
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think that is on her radar. And then as Ashley leaves, we see that she ignores a call from Jason coming in on her phone.
God, Jason, poor Jason. This dude, like, you know, you can't blame him for falling in love with Ashley Marin, but it's not going to go his way.
I saw a thing on Twitter. Somebody was like quoting from a book that was called The Tragedy of Heterosexuality. And I feel like that could be the subtitle of this episode for many of the straight couple scenes. And you are about to dive into one right now. This scene, The Tragedy of Heterosexuality.
Yeah. The Bin of Sin, : The Tragedy of Heterosexuality. A true bit of sin. So Toby is at the police station, and I'm just gonna say it, Toby looks stupid in his cop uniform. He just does. He looks silly in it. He looks like he's wearing a Halloween costume. He's staring at various pieces of Allison evidence. He doesn't seem to be putting any of the evidence together. He's just sort of like, Allison's mugshot, Allison's polygraph, a picture of Mona, a signature of Holbrook's, like, Spencer calls then. Spencer arrives then. She wants to talk about Hannah. He whisper yells at her about working with Caleb and how she said she wouldn't do that anymore. But she says that she is worried that Hannah is going to do something stupid. Tanner approaches just then, asking if Spencer should be at school, which I was here. I was like, wouldn't it be hilarious if the thing that the liars ultimately went down for was truancy? They've been involved in how many murders? And it's like, you've missed one too many classes, ladies. Spencer leaves, and Toby, again, like with no finesse, with no, like, you know, careful planning, just basically says to Tanner, like, the facts of the murder trial aren't clear. Somebody might have manipulated Allie's polygraph. It might be Holbrook. We saw them kissing at the ice ball. I knew, like, the whole, you know, thin blue line is all very bad, and Tanner protecting Holbrook is very bad. But I do have to give it up to her for dressing Toby down for having been a cop for all of 6 minutes.
Yeah, I think that, gosh, the body language of Toby when he is whisper yelling at Spencer, he has his hands on his hips, like he's a big old manly man. And he also, at one point, it almost looks like he has a hand, like, almost on his weapon holster, which is like, wow, way to, you know, way to have, like, a nice calming discussion with someone who loves and trusts you, like, woof. And then after Tanner, like, very rightly gives him what for, he then, like, just kind of sits down and looks so sulky.
Yes. Yeah, he's a very mad boy.
Oh, boy. Presra rushes into Arya's house, thinking there's an emergency. There is not, but she wants to tell him that she got into Talmadge. He is happy for her. He name-checks Jackie a little, and then, unable to give her 5 consecutive minutes of attention, needs to rush back to his life as a busy businessman. She stops him and says that she actually went to Jackie and the admissions board and wrote them a letter. She hands him a copy, and he reads through it, furrowing his brow ever deeper as he does.
Yes, he looks very upset. Hannah is gathering up her various destroying evidence supplies when Caleb arrives. He tells her that he's corrupted the files. She shows him her loot and announces that he is going to help her move the evidence. He doesn't think that they'll pull this off, but she goes through her whole plan. She's rented a truck and a dolly. Can teenagers rent trucks and dollies? I don't think so. He is very, he doesn't think this is a good idea. He's doubting the plan. I feel like if this was Spencer putting together this whole plan, he would not be doubting it. I feel like he'd be along for the ride. She says she has no choice but to do this. He says that she's forgotten one thing, the cameras. And he says this in a tone that implies that he is going to reluctantly help her.
I definitely agree. If Spencer were working this plan, Caleb would get on board without all this nonsense. I bet that teenagers cannot rent trucks, moving trucks particularly, but I bet that Hannah used the fake IDs that Allie got them way back when, for drinking and sneaking into frat parties, but now these years later for, you know, renting a Penske truck.
You know, it's helpful to have those when you need them. It's true. It's true.
Oh, so Presra has finished reading the letter, and Arya is just in a flutter. Arya is, like, fully enmeshed in a That's So Arya episode for, like, the whole run. And she's trying to get Emily to, like, co-star in it at various points. But yes. So here we are. She's in a flutter, falling all over herself to apologize. But Presra does that thing where you say you're not mad or hurt in a tone of voice that leaves your partner sure that you probably are mad or hurt, but won't say anything or have a direct conversation about it. He is so awful. He passive aggressively says, she did what she had to do to get in, and Jackie must have lapped it right up, etc. Arya spirals further and further, berating herself for what she did, now having to plead with him to yell or get angry. He continues to act passive-aggressively while staring daggers at the physical letter itself.
Yeah, and notably does not even open the door for the possibility that this might reflect how she actually feels. I mean, later in the episode, he does in a very weird way. But, like, it's, yeah, there's not even any hint of, like, well, do you feel this way? Like, should we talk about this?
Or to say, like, oh my gosh, if you felt like you needed to go to these lengths to get into Talmadge, like, what can we do? Like, what can I do to help you, like, look at some other schools? What strings can I pull to help you, you know, maybe get interviews other places?
For sure.
Nothing like that at all.
Nope. The probably the most functional heterosexual couple of this episode, Ashley and Jason, they are having a working lunch. She's going over the sort of loose ends of her job that she's tying up here because she is quitting. He thinks that while it was unexpected what happened, it could potentially be a good thing. She tells him that she's seeing someone and it's serious. And I like this little exchange where he's like, how serious? And she's like, well, he proposed last night. And he's like, well, that's serious. She blames what happened on distance and loneliness. He takes it pretty well, trying to make this as not awkward as possible, saying that he will let her finish things up alone at the office. I feel like Jason, like, is one of the few men on this show who accepts a boundary when it is set.
Yeah, he may be a goldfish, but he remains one of my favorite guys on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, I feel like the whole first part of this scene is basically Jason, like, saying as politely as possible, I'd hit that again.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, want to go to the bathroom, Ashley? Or, like, back at my place? Like,
yeah, he's trying to dress it up with, like, you know, unexpected but good. But, like, he's really, like, putting it down and hoping that Ashley is going to pick it up here.
Exactly, exactly. Yep.
Hannah and Caleb are cutting the wires to the storage unit cameras or alarms. Hannah gets out the drill, and Caleb works on the lock to let them into the storage unit.
This episode is edited so weirdly because there are so many scenes like this that are 30 seconds and then we cut back and it's like the same, nothing's changed. Very strange. Also, shouldn't, for all of their, you know, they're wearing gloves, shouldn't they be wearing hairnets?
Yeah, and they're also wearing blue evidence booties we see when they go into the unit. Yeah, they should be doing a lot of things that they're not necessarily engaged with here. I feel like the quick cuts back and forth, I feel like they're trying to create a sense of movement that is not inherent to what's actually happening. Yeah.
I agree. So the next scene opens with a deeply troubling line from Emily, who says, I can't believe you told Prezra and lived to talk about it. Ma'am, can we talk about what that implies? What? Then Arya has another one of those vaguely meta lines where she says, I wasted so much energy worrying about how he was going to react when I could have been worrying about all the other things I should be worrying about, which ain't that just the way of being a PLL fan? Now their worry is focused on Hannah. They think maybe a brownie can help matters. But lo, just then Spencer careens up onto the curb. Just bullet a china shop Hastings here. The tracker on Mona's computer is on the move. Hannah hasn't been at school, and they think that she is moving evidence. Emily weirdly says that Hannah wouldn't do something like that. Time for a liar caper. They all pack into the car. A question that I have is, moving evidence seems exactly like a liar move. Why are they all acting like this is a completely unheard of idea that Hannah would do this? Like, a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about planting evidence in Mona's house.
I mean, it's because that's what the stakes are this week. This week, people think we shouldn't move evidence. Even though I actually think that Hannah has the right of it here. I think that if you leave all that stuff in the storage unit, it's definitely, like, you don't know what all of it is. You, like, it's the typical A catch 22, but it does seem like doing something is better than doing nothing here.
At the very least, Hannah should know what's in there.
Yeah, Yeah. I totally agree. But I have to say, we need to talk about Spencer's outfit that she is wearing when she jumps out of her, you know, wildly parked vehicle. She is like the epitome of a queer look alert. She is wearing a sleeveless pinstriped button down with a sleeveless tweed vest. It is a very, very queer look. And Aria is wearing a vest as well. So we have two vested liars running around for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, Emily and Aria are almost matching. Like, they're both wearing these kind of florally toned outfits with, like, white and black accents.
Yes, yes. Let's see. Elsewhere, Ashley is gathering up her things at the office when Jason comes in. He starts to leave, but she tells him it's fine for him to stay. He shows a flash of being Spencer and Allison's brother by noticing that despite her maybe engagement, she is not wearing a ring. She confides that she has not said yes yet. He's a pastor, and being his wife has certain expectations that go with it. Jason jokes about how church socials, you know, must be brutal, but Ashley says, you know, she hasn't always made the best decisions. She wouldn't want anything that she's done to come back and hurt him. Jason asks if Saturday night was her using him as a reason to say no. He very perceptibly kind of says he's done things like that before, messed something up because he was afraid that his past was going to get in the way. Ashley says that it wasn't, even though he promises that he wouldn't be offended if it was. He smolders at her for a while, and she stands there probably thinking about what an absolute zero Pastor Ted is.
Yeah, they should totally hook up again here. Like, he sees right through her. Part of me is annoyed that the only character to voice this, like, this thing that we think that Ashley probably did is Jason. But I also am glad, like, it shows how much Jason sees her. Also, I know that, like, probably the show is telling us that Ashley is referring to, like, the Wilden stuff or, you know, that kind of thing when they talk about, when she's talking about, like, the things from her past. But what else do we think she could be referring to here?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, the money in the lasagna box that she stole from the bank, for example. There is the fact that she was on trial for murder not that long ago.
Good point.
But I also think that she could just be talking about her past more generally. Like, we know that she didn't have a good home life growing up. It could be not having a relationship with her family of origin. It could be, you know, if she's made any choices regarding having or not having children previously. I just feel like there's a lot that you could read into this for sure.
Totally. I agree. So sad music plays as Prezra rereads the letter in his little back office area. Then that sad music continues to play as the liars drive, as they continue to trace the laptop. They say that Caleb has got to be helping Hannah, but they don't know why. Which again, like, as like one of those, it's like this, like the liars haven't done stuff like this all the time, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that musical interlude with Prezra, he's just been so busy. He has to meet with all these contractors. He has so much busy man stuff to do. And now he has all this time to sit and read this letter while the sad music plays. I'm sure we're supposed to feel like sorry for him, or to interpret this as him really being hurt, but like clearly he is considering how to most effectively play the martyr over it. Like, he's obviously like committing specific lines to memory so that he can bring them up later to his greatest advantage.
Yeah, so he can like have them tattooed on his body in sadness or something. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I got shot, and all I got was this admission letter that says, "You regret having squandered your time in high school with me." Yeah, that's going to be, like, on a t-shirt that he's wearing very soon.
He, like, gets the text of the letter, like, tattooed in a circle around the bullet wound, around the scar.
Oh my goodness. Oh, so meanwhile, Hannah and Caleb are still trying to break the lock at the storage unit. They finally succeed, but oh no, the unit has been cleared of everything except the barrel. So much for them being one step ahead of Holbrook. Caleb wants them to open the barrel, but Hannah refuses. It's bad enough that Mona is gone, but if she went like this, Caleb agrees they need to get it out of here, and they leave the unit to go and get the dolly.
I totally get what Hannah's saying here, and this is a case where, like, looking at the thing wouldn't really prove whether or not it wasn't Mona, because the body would be so, like, decayed at this point. But this also feels a little bit like another, you know, Spencer doesn't take the helmet off the motorcyclist to find out that it's Toby, or Melissa doesn't look at the face to find out if it's actually Allison. You know, like, there are so many instances in this show of somebody not looking at the face of a dead person and just assuming it's the dead person they think it is when it in fact isn't. I guess I do get a pass on this one because, like, it would probably just be Sludge.
Well, I'll give them a pass on this one because this one would probably be really smelly.
And just, like, deeply upsetting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. But it's a bit, it's in a long line of this, of similar behavior, I would say.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So meanwhile, suddenly the liars have been led to some spooky, dark, warehousey place that they quickly discern used to be an ice cream factory. It feels very sudden that they're suddenly like inside this ice cream factory. Also, why didn't they just go to the storage unit was my question, to like see if Hannah and Caleb are there, to see if it's empty. No, they think for some reason that Hannah and Caleb came out here. They follow the sound of various noises, and Emily starts yelling Hannah and Caleb's names, which, you know, way to let A know exactly where you are. Then the liars are like, there's no service. There's inexplicable scary wind moving things around. Time for us to just split up. This is one of those annoying moments where the show requires the liars to behave absolutely in such a stupid way that makes no sense.
Yes. I have to say, I think this is a good set. Boo Boo's abandoned ice cream factory.
Yeah.
We have that nice establishing shot of the factory all brick and crumbly at sunset. And then the interior is full of, like, unidentifiable equipment and chains. Like, there are so many chains, I guess, involved in this particular ice cream making process. So it's like, I feel like this is like a good spooky set, which somewhat like makes up for the fact that the liars are behaving like imbeciles.
Yeah. It's not a bad set. It's not a bad set. I'll give it that.
Oh, back at the storage unit place, Hannah and Caleb are trying to figure out where the exit is. Didn't they, like, hasn't Caleb been here twice? Hasn't he crawled through the air vents? Doesn't he have, like, a map? Anyway, they're trying to figure out where the exit is. The power keeps flickering on and off. It goes off just as two figures appear in front of them. It goes on, and the people are Tanner and Officer Tobey. Gasp! I know. Tanner is asking Hannah and Caleb what they're doing, and they pretend that they were checking to see what sizes of storage unit are available. So they're thinking about renting one. This is obviously very fishy, and Tanner asks Toby if he knew his friend here was interested in storage units. He helpfully says he did not. Tanner clocks Hannah's giant bag of evidence disposal items and asks if Hannah is nervous. She acts like it's about whether or not she'll make it to the bathroom in time as she has to pee. Tanner lets them go, and Toby asks if they need to wait for the manager to look at the search warrant. Tanner kind of shrugs this off, but then notices the cut wires for the security system and mutters that someone must be camera shy.
Yeah, Toby, as always, is so very, very useless. Like, he is a block of wood, be more helpful in this scene. Also, yeah, it's just, it's that I did not expect the particulars of Hannah and Caleb, like, getting out of the storage unit to be its own, like, mini caper. I do like, however, that when the lights flicker, it kind of looks like it's two A figures, and then the lights flicker back on, and it's Toby and Tanner. I do think that's kind of a cool effect.
I agree with that. Also, Toby, Keegan is having to do some prop work in this scene because Tanner has apparently brought him along so that he can wield these bolt cutters. So he's carrying, and the bolt cutters are like, Keegan is a tall guy, but the bolt cutters are fully like half as tall as him. So he's just like lugging around trying to like look important with these bolt cutters. And then later he's going to be really disappointed when he doesn't get to use them on the lock. And he'll try to use them on the barrel, which does not appear to have any bolts.
Oh, Toby. Oh, Officer Tobster. Oh, man. So back at the spooky ice cream factory, Spencer hears the voices of her two loves, Hannah and Caleb. Two of them talking about the plan to go to the storage unit. It's just kind of playing on a loop. Meanwhile, Emily goes down some stairs, also following a noise. At this point, it seems like the liars are more just kind of curious than actually like looking for anything. Like they're just kind of going on a stroll through this creepy old ice cream factory. She like pulls this sheeting piece of sheeting down and this box tips over. There's like a cat that yowls. There's a dead rat. And then there's a weird moment where she like reaches down, picks up a bag of freeze-dried almonds, and we like stay on the bag of freeze-dried almonds for several beats too long. What is this about?
I don't know. It's like, this is like a moment that encapsulates this whole episode. The body in the barrel is going to eventually mean as much as this pack of freeze-dried almonds that we have to look at for like a full 5 seconds. Like, we look at this bag of almonds for longer than Paige and Emily kissed goodbye. Like, this is they're making it seem like it's very important.
Yeah, and Emily's really like studying it, like, oh, almonds.
What's
okay.
What is it gonna be? Is it gonna be drugs? Is it gonna be like something else? Is it going to be like, yeah. I guess what it is.
Yeah.
I think I just figured it out. The room that they're gonna get caught in later, I said it's like a flash freezer. That must be where they would freeze dry these almonds.
I guess so. Sure. I mean, I think you're giving them more credit than they deserve, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah. But maybe.
It would make more sense. Remember the rat poison that we had to care about for like.
Yeah. Yes.
It would have been better if there was like rat poison here as a callback to like whether rat poison killed anyone.
Inexplicably, the knife that they found recently is in there. It's just like sort of a greatest hits of like various pieces of evidence. The trophy with the rat blood on it, like all sorts of stuff.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So Tanner and Tobey get to the actual storage unit they've been tipped off about. Oh, the lock has been broken already. They put on gloves and open the door, then stand there staring at the barrel.
Yeah, and it's like they're in like suspended animation because every time we cut back to them, it's like they've taken two more steps into the room, but like nothing has really progressed.
It's so funny because remember when I said I remembered the barrel episodes as being a real slog? It's hilarious that I now keep getting all the slog parts to talk about where it's like, people are back at the storage unit. There is still a battle.
Do you want to take the next scene so I can take the next barrel conversation?
No, I'm fine with it. I'm just reasserting the fact that it is a bit of a slog and that like every single scene could be encapsulated by there is still a barrel. It still doesn't matter.
Exactly. It's still filled with something. Doesn't matter what. So Spencer continues to follow the sounds of Caleb and Hannah to a freezer. She eventually realizes that the voices she's hearing are on a recording on a laptop and they're just playing on a loop. It's all the same dialogue about, you know, destroying the various pieces of evidence, etc. Aria arrives just then, somewhat startling Spencer, who has propped the door open with, what is this, like a wrench of some sort?
Yeah, a pipe wrench. Okay.
Yeah. So she's kind of wedged the door open with this. But when Arya comes in, they start hearing some noises. Spencer reaches for the pipe wrench, but then A yanks it out and locks them in and turns on the freezer from burning to freezing. Good job, A. All sorts of elements coming after the liars. Also, I found it kind of interesting that A used a video of the liars the way that they did in this episode, because I feel like that's not something we've gotten in a while. Like, that feels like more an A, like, season one, season two move. Emily follows. So the liars are, like, freaking out. They're starting to freeze to, you know, they think they're going to freeze to death. Emily runs down when she hears, like, hissing and screaming, and she finds them and just starts mashing on various buttons and starts hitting things with the pipe wrench as Spencer and Arya are like actively freezing to death. Emily falls over onto the floor and she's just sort of staring at them as the glass is frosting over, and it looks like they're about to die, and she's not really doing anything. And then Emily like hits another thing and is able to finally get them out. She drapes them in her coat, like the knight in shining armor that she is. A detail that I think... So, okay. Was I reading too much into the A tag at the end of this episode? Or was this all somewhat a ploy to get their fingerprints all over this space so that A would have access to their fingerprints?
Yes, correct. That's what this was.
Okay. So A is essentially like freezing their fingerprints in place to have access, to be able to plant their fingerprints.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like kind of a, I feel like a good sort of sneaky A move, because you think it's just, oh, this is just a classic A trying to kill the liars / scare them plot. But actually it's a little bit more, it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
It's true. It's true. Do you imagine that after Emily covers them with her coat, that they probably have to like cuddle together for body heat and possibly have sex in order to get their body temperatures up?
I think that that's a very strong possibility. The question is, though, Spencer is probably the one who suggests the threesome, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. She's like, this is the fastest way. It's the only way, guys. And Arya is like, really? I feel like there's another way. It's the only way. It's the only way, Arya.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So Tanner and Toby open the barrel and discover a foul smell. Toby is sent to call for a hazmat team, probably because Tanner doesn't trust him not to barf. Tanner opens it, looks inside, gets a grim look on her face, and then goes to close it again. Then, there upon the floor, she sees it. A drop of blood.
Bum, bum, bum. So it is now nighttime. Apparently, Ashley and Jason have basically spent the whole day together. He is helping her load boxes into her trunk. She gives him a list of headhunters. He apologizes for sort of calling her out earlier. And she says it's okay, that there might be some truth to it, and asks if he's going to stay with the business. A thing that I like here is that Jason calls out his awful dad, and Ashley doesn't defend Ken. As people sort of tend to do. She's like, maybe you shouldn't keep working with him. Maybe you shouldn't stick around. They sort of lightly flirt over their bad pasts, and it's very sweet. They hug. He goes in for a kiss. She says this can't happen again, and he apologizes, and she rushes off. But seriously, who wouldn't fall a little in love with Ashley Marin, you know?
I agree. And she just drives off, leaving him looking so hunky and so sad there on the sidewalk.
I know. And I really, really do ship them. I really do.
I agree. I totally agree. Oh, man. You know, capitalism is really fucked up when you and your friends almost die in an abandoned factory, but you still have to go and close up the brew because Prezra asked you to. My God. Emily comes in and she's leaving like another message for Hannah. She goes into the back and finds Talia stirring apples. So why couldn't Prezra ask Talia to close up since she was already there? This is a clear conspiracy to help Talia woo her teenage paramour. Talia tries to flirt by plucking something out of Emily's hair and then asking Emily to stir the apples. Emily is not very good at stirring and immediately becomes distracted by her cell phone, a message from Hannah about Tanner and Toby being at the storage place, which causes the apples to catch fire. Talia puts it out quickly and tells Emily it is no big deal. God, do you think she peeled and sliced all those apples herself? I know accidents happen, but I would be quite unhappy if all that apple work went up in flames because of someone else's inattention to a very simple task. Talia sends Emily to go and wait out front before she can cause any more damage.
Do you remember the episode when we talked about how Arya was going to start the salad and we asked, what is that involved? Why is that a thing? I feel like the same is true of this Emily closing up the brew business, because not only Talia there, but there's another nameless worker closing up when Emily walks in. There's like a redheaded girl that Emily just walks. So Emily has been called in to close up the brew, even though two other workers who are still working are there. It odd choice.
Yes. Yes. Definitely agree.
Yeah. It's yeah. And like, what has Talia been doing all day? Like, she's just been back here, like peeling and stirring her apples. Like, it just, it doesn't seem like her time management is very good. If like now is when they're supposed to be closing up and she's like in the middle of what looks to be kind of a big cooking project. It's a bit strange.
Yeah. What do you think these apples are for? Are they like for a tart? Are they for a pie?
She says later that they're for a pie. And then is like, now my apple pie will become apple flambé, which I have questions about why she's cooking the apple. As somebody who's made a lot of apple pies in my day, I have questions about like why Talia is like cooking them on the stove with something very flammable before putting them into the crust. Like, I have questions.
It's a great question. I don't think that they had a plan for what she was doing with these apples.
No, I think it was just like some more kind of lazy prop work. Like, Talia, here, stir some apples. So Prezra is, again, passive-aggressively commenting on Arya's lack of an appetite as he presents her with a present, with a flourish. Also, it really is something that Arya's parents are nowhere near this getting into college storyline. The present is a leather-bound notebook with her initials in them. He says that he doesn't want her to miss out on any single adventure, just like she missed out on so much of high school. There was a line of Arya's that made me laugh where he says something about like that letter, you know, what you wrote, like it was so convincing. And she's like, yeah, because I'm a good writer, which that is so Arya. He thinks that she does feel that way. She denies it. He says he wants what's best for her. She's an approaching an exciting time, a.k.a. getting a little too old for him. And he thinks she might grow to resent him, but there will be no regrets if she takes this time for herself. She is very insistent that she doesn't need to think about it. She wants to stay with him. She can have all the adventures and they can still be a couple. But he asks her to promise to think about it and a single tear falls. This is a classic Prezra move, putting her in a position to double down on her devotion to him while also perhaps breaking things off due to the fact that she will no longer be his high school student.
Yeah, this is his power position, forcing her to convince him that she's worth allowing her the great prize of loving him.
Well, and also, hasn't the thing that their relationship, like the way that they've spoken about it, their relationship has always been building towards this idea of, oh, you'll graduate high school and you'll be an adult and I'll be an adult and we can finally be together. And it's like now suddenly that she's actually going to be an adult, he doesn't want that? Wonder what that could be about.
Well, yeah, and his only response to this whole college situation is to center himself and the letter and what's going on. Like, he could, you know, he could help her get into some other schools, like I said. He could do what she's asking and just not make a big deal out of this. Like, but those things don't have him right in the middle of it, so he is not interested.
Of course. Of course.
Ooh, so Hannah is at Spencer's, and they are having a vicious argument. Hannah is accusing Spencer of telling Toby about the storage unit, which Spencer denies. She thought about telling him, but she didn't. Hannah wants to know how he wound up there with Tanner then. Spencer suggests that Holbrook broke into Hannah's computer and knew they were going to be there. Hannah wants to know why he didn't leave all the other stuff there then. Again, Spencer doesn't know. She wants to know why Toby didn't warn them. Spencer doesn't know. Hannah asks when Toby's job became more important than his friends. Answer, it always was. But Spencer defends Toby again, saying that this isn't his fault. They warned Hannah not to move that stuff, and she got herself into this trouble, and she brought this trouble down on Caleb as well. Hannah is, like, beside herself and storms off because it's, like, now Spencer is, like, kind of saying that Caleb is her problem, too, and Hannah is not having it. This is a really, really serious fight, but unlike Spencer's fights with Toby that she's been having, you can tell that, like, the reason that this fight is wrenching for Spencer and Hannah is that they do love and respect each other so much. Hannah leaves, and Spencer tries to call Toby again.
I feel like there is a very story of Tobey's actions that one could put into all of this, that he purposefully set Hannah and Caleb up because he wanted to get Caleb and Hannah away from Spencer because they are the two people who sort of threaten his connection to Spencer the most.
Oh, I can totally agree with that.
Yeah. This is a hard fight. And it's interesting. These two have had a few fights during the show, and it's always tough. It's always a tough one. So she calls Toby, but Toby is at work still. He dismisses the call when Tanner walks in, saying that the working theory is that more people helped Allison. She tells him that if the drops of blood are a match for Mona's DNA, the liars will be the first people she brings in, which is, I guess, because Hannah and Caleb were there. That's the connection that she's drawing. She says that withholding information is not an option. And if he knows anything, now is the time to tell her.
Emily is on the phone with Hannah, further doubting that this could be Holbrook still. Why would he kill for Allison? Spencer and Arya almost died in the ice cream factory. She quickly hangs up when Talia appears and touts her newly minted apple flambé. They chat for a moment and Talia offers Emily a covered plate of comfort food mashed potatoes. Emily apologizes for being such a mess and Talia apologizes for coming across as a control freak. She sits down the moment Emily seems vulnerable. And after a few minutes of talking, announces that she didn't mention Prezra being cute because she was interested in him. She's interested in Emily and was trying to work out if she's into guys or girls. Emily looks a bit stunned, and Talia takes off for the back of the shop to finish cleaning without any further discussion. And wow, this storyline is a true mess. Let's just review that Emily's love interests after Paige are this married adult predator woman who's handing out mashed potatoes as a, you know, point of flirtation. Sarah Harvey, who has no personality and was a long-term accomplice in terrorizing her. And Sabrina, the teenage bakery manager. Samara is looking pretty good now, isn't she?
Oh, yes, she really is. She really, really is. First of all, I like how Talia's rewriting history by saying, you know, when I asked if you thought Prezra was cute, it's like, no. Let's look back over what you actually said, Talia. You were talking about his buns. I know you would like to erase that awkwardness from the record, but we remember. This is a tough scene because Emily is so often not self-aware that it is kind of nice to see her be somewhat self-aware in this moment and be like, what do I even seem like to you? But then Talia is like being such a Prezra and taking, you know, so quickly taking advantage of that. The like confessing feelings and then bouncing before Emily can react thing is also very Prezra. Yeah, and also just, it makes me laugh that Emily's having all these frantic phone calls in the middle of the brew when, like, there's, Talia is still there, that other poor nameless redheaded girl, who, maybe that's who Emily should date, because she looked age appropriate. Like, she's still running around somewhere. Yeah, this is bad. I don't like this. And they don't even have much in the way of chemistry either, so it's just generally a thumbs down for me.
I agree. Do you think that they have more chemistry than Emily and Sarah Harvey?
Yeah.
Do you think they have more chemistry than Emily and Sabrina?
I think so. Like, it's, I mean, we're talking about, like, very, very thin margins here.
We're talking about, like, is it zero or is it -1? But I think that,
right.
I think that we're not yet into the negative number territory.
You know, I read somewhere that for that new Fear Street movie, they had the female leads do a 6-hour chemistry read because they really wanted the central lesbian couple to have good chemistry. And it's like, man, if Pretty Little Liars did like a 6-minute chemistry read fully and any of her love interests, how fantastic would that be? You know,
it would be very, very good.
It would be.
I really want to circle back to the mashed potatoes. Have you ever given a person a plate of mashed potatoes as an endeavor in, like, trying to get them to like you?
No, although I will say that when I was a kid, mashed potatoes, that was very much my comfort food. And that was, like, the food that my mom would make me when, like, I wanted a comforting meal. And then I found out as an adult, I found out that she used to sneak cauliflower into the mashed potatoes to make them healthier.
True.
I know, but I never tasted them. So, like, I do, the idea of mashed potatoes as comfort food makes sense to me. What's stranger to me is that when Talia holds the plate out, it's, like, covered in plastic wrap. There is something white that appears to be mashed potatoes on there, but there appears to be some other stuff on the plate as well that she doesn't name, which is suspicious to me.
Yeah, I just really feel like, now, how old were you when, like, mashed potatoes were a favorite comfort food?
Oh, like, elementary school age. I mean, very
okay.
young. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really feel like if I were in Emily's shoes and I knew that this person had some, like, sweet stewed apple something that was available, and instead of that, they handed me, like, these allegedly flirtatious mashed potatoes, I would not wish to take things further. I don't think, personally. But
yeah, mashed potatoes are not a sexy food in any way, shape, or form. Also, they're not just, like, something you whip up. Like, there's boiling involved. It's like maybe the reason that Talia is, like, taking so long to close up the brew is because she's been making, like, mashed potatoes, you know, take, like, a good, you know, 30, 45 minutes, maybe. Like, they're kind of a timely meal or part of a meal.
And I mean, I could understand, like, I think the brew does have, like, pastries and stuff. So I could get, if you were, like, doing some apple work for, like, tarts or, you know, crisps or whatever. But does the brew serve mashed potatoes? Like, can you go to the brew and just get yourself a big plate of, like, potatoes and roast vegetables? I would not have thought that that was part of their gestalt.
I think it would have made a lot more sense, especially because it's like Emily apparently hasn't had dinner, if it was like, oh, I made you a panini or something. Because that feels like something the brew might serve.
Sure.
Because coffee shops sell panini. And also, that wouldn't take, like, 45 minutes to make. Like, it's conceivable that she could have, like, relatively quickly whipped up, you know, a panini or, like, you know, I don't know. We had some extra mini quiches in the back. Here's one for you. Like, something, you know, but yes, I agree. The mashed potatoes, for a number of reasons, are an odd choice. And it's also weird to me that she, like, comes out and it's, like, this fully, like, wrapped package of mashed potatoes.
Yeah, so it's like you can't even eat them right now while you're waiting for everybody else to close up like you were supposed to do. Yeah, you just have to take it home.
And, like, who wants to eat cold leftover mashed potatoes, too?
An excellent question.
Yeah, I'm suspicious. Speaking of suspicious, Hannah is filling everyone in that she thinks that Holbrook set them up and will eventually send the video to, or I guess she's not filling everyone in. She's just talking to Caleb here.
Yeah, she's just having the fight with Caleb now.
Yeah, and that Holbrook set them up and will send the video of them to Tanner. She apologizes for pulling him into this mess, saying that it was, saying that she will say, if they get into trouble, that it was all her idea and she forced him into it and he should stay away from her. She's dangerous to be around right now. Then they'll both be behind bars, he says. He's in it for life with her. It's almost surprising that he doesn't suggest marriage here just so they can't testify against each other, because that almost feels like the vibe of this scene.
Well, and that's eventually why they are going to get married. So exactly. It'll all come full circle in the end.
Right. It'll happen for them eventually. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So now it's time for our contemplative scene medley. Aria is looking at her high school yearbook and feeling some kind of way about the utter lack of activities listed under her name. Gosh, could this be because she generally thinks she's above such juvenile things, or because she was being stalked and terrorized for most of high school? Also, could her total lack of extracurriculars possibly be connected to her difficulty getting into college? She's thinking thoughts, and then we cut over to Ashley, who is, playing with the ring, looking unsure, trying on the ring, and still looking conflicted.
I really like how these yearbook photos look like genuine yearbook pictures of, like, teenagers, and then it cuts to Aria's, and it's, like, clearly, like, a Lucy Hale headshot from, like, the homecoming episode. Like, the lighting is completely different. It's, like, she's posed. Like, yeah, this is not a high school student. I do like the little shot of Ashley trying on the ring. I feel like that's, like, I feel like actually, weirdly, the Ashley stuff is sort of the closest this episode gets to, like, interesting character work.
Agreed.
Which is not necessarily what you'd expect. So Spencer is lying on her couch when Toby calls. He's buried in paperwork. He claims he's buried in paperwork, but we see that he's actually outside. She asks what he was doing at the storage unit. He says that Tanner got an anonymous call that Mona's body was in there. Why didn't she tell him, he wants to know. He says he couldn't get away to call her. He says he can't talk about it. And when she says she wants him to come over, he says he won't. He gets off late. She needs to see him. He'll call her tomorrow. And then he basically hangs up on her. Why was him joining the cops ever a good solution? Anybody? She cries and throws her phone, and he gets in his car.
Yeah, she's, like, full-on weeping, and he really could not care less. Like, in fact, it might actually be making him happy.
Yeah, it's very clear that these two are not in a good place.
Now, when she's having the argument with Hannah, and then she's having this argument with Toby, and he says, like, why didn't you tell me? And she's like, you know, why didn't you warn us and everything? Do you think that if Toby had known where they were going and he'd had a chance to warn Spencer, do you think he would have? I suggest he would not.
No, I don't think. I mean, I think the way he was speaking about joining the cops initially, like, he would have. But the way that he's been behaving lately, no, I don't think he would.
Yeah, 100% he would not have. A-Tag, we see some of the items that were removed from the storage unit in A's possession. The black hoodie is walking back through Boo Boo's ice cream factory and flashing their flashlight at the area where the liars were trapped. We see clear outlines of their full-on fingerprints and handprints from where they were frantically banging on the doors and windows trying to get out. This seems bad.
Yeah. It also seems like a very elaborate way for A to have gotten their fingerprints.
I really agree. I feel like there are probably a lot of other ways, like more low impact ways that A could have gotten their fingerprints. But I think probably in this situation, they're going to be able to be like transferable. Like in spy movies, when you see someone like taking a piece of tape, like in Captain Marvel, when like Samuel L. Jackson like takes a fingerprint off the phone and uses it to get through a pass key. You know, I think it's probably going to be one of those types of things.
And, you know, it was sort of a 2-for-1 for A, because A got to like terrify the liars and make them think they were going to die and get their fingerprints. So, and I mean, I will say too, I think because the liars are so used to being terrorized by A in that kind of like life and death way, I don't even think it would be on their radar that it could all be a ploy to get their fingerprints. So it's actually a pretty smart move by A, even if it is a bit elaborate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. And I feel like it is a really nice final shot of the episode, is like their hands being like, you know, kind of backlit in this way.
Do we eventually find out that Charlotte owns this ice cream factory?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be shocking.
No. It wouldn't.
All of her investments in the stock market. She probably owns most of the abandoned factories throughout Rosewood.
She owns that half of Pennsylvania that the cons don't own.
Yeah, she like owns the sawmill where they were almost sawing Emily in half, etc.
So that's the episode. I feel like not one that we had an especially lot to say about, because not much of consequence actually happened.
No, and there's just so much, like there's a lot of action in this episode where people are just like running around different areas of the ice cream factory, dodging like containers of liquid nitrogen and random chains hanging from the ceiling, etc.
Yeah. Next week though is Oh What Hard Luck Stories They All Hand Me, which is an episode I remember liking, because we're kind of going to get more information about Mike and Mona and what he might know about her.
Yeah, and I think that's the Leslie Stone. That's the first time we like really kind of get some Leslie Stone stuff going on.
God, is Leslie Stone... Leslie Stone might be one of the biggest red herrings of all of PLL. Like, they put so much effort into her, and she matters not a bit.
Yeah, she's basically going to be the barrel of the next episode.
Yeah. She... Well, and they... I mean, it goes so far that they think she's the one who put them in the dollhouse at one point.
Yeah, that's true. Do you remember... Well, yeah, because she's, like, a scientist, and so it seems like, you know, it seems like it was...
Yeah.
It doesn't. Do you think that the body in the barrel... Like, do you agree that it's, like, one of the most bad faith pieces of writing that PLL does, where it just doesn't matter at all who's in this barrel or anything? Or do you think it's, like, more on the level of, like, we don't care whose finger bones were in Spencer's corset, etc.?
I think it's more than that, because it lasts for as long as it does. I also think it's, like, to me, it shares some DNA with the dollhouse in that it's, like, a really creepy idea and a creepy set piece. But, like, we're not really going to deal with the ramifications of it. I mean, the dollhouse is obviously a more extreme version of it with more lasting ramifications, but it's sort of the show playing at like, oh, this is a darker version of PLL, but like not really doing anything with that. I'm trying to think, what would you say are some other examples of like really bad faith storytelling?
I just feel like this is definitely one of the biggest ones. I think that Sarah Harvey being Black Widow is an excellent example of it, where like,
we're
meant to think that all of these things matter and are extremely important. And then it turns out that like, it's a character who we care about not at all. And furthermore, a character we'd never even heard of at the time. Like, so it was not even guessable at the time who that was, because it was a character who we'd never even heard mentioned and had no attachment to whatsoever.
Yes, I agree. I also think all of the business with Beach Hottie,
it would be
kind of an example of that. I'm sure that there are like dozens of examples we could come up with, but it is that is an interesting thing to think about, like what are the most sort of infuriating micro choices that they make throughout the series. Do we have any more that we want to say about the bin of sin?
I think that we have said pretty much all we have to say about the bin of sin. I am just looking ahead to see. Oh man, I think next week is going to be a really big episode for us. I think next week is Hannah hitting Holbrook with the tire iron.
Oh, okay. I'm excited. I'm excited that Holbrook's going to be back because there's been so much talk about him. And, you know, it's like we need to see him again to kind of start wrapping that storyline up.
Yeah, he's going to be back in his Holbrook face. This is like, even though Hannah is like going to be in jail before the end of the half season, this is a great period for Hannah. She's going to hit Holbrook with a tire iron. And then before too long, she's going to really do that really excellent Hannah dance.
Oh, it's true. Also, the Whispers machine.
Oh God. Yeah, we're gonna have to go through some
appearance. You know, I feel like the artist is a little bit of a Saint Germain in that I think in my memory he's so terrible that he's in like every episode of this half season. But I feel like by the end of this, we're going to discover that he's only in like four episodes or something.
I think that that's probably true.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll be catching some Whispers next week. So if you have thoughts on the bad faith storylines of PLL, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast or send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We will be back next week with it. It's a double Joseph Doherty, who is one of our faves. He does a lot of really fun episodes for Oh, What Hard Luck Stories They All Hand Me. So until then,
take care. We'll be right back.